Let's see if you recognize this phrase. Please allow me to introduce myself. Woo-hoo! Woo-hoo! If you don't know that phrase, you need immediately after church to go out and buy or download the Rolling Stones' Sympathy for the Devil. If you need to know one devil song, this is the one. Why? Well, where shall I start? Besides the catchy chord progression and overall groove, it's wide and deep in terms of historical references, and audacious in its examination of the devil's role in shaping human destiny. It is unabashedly confrontational, timely, and timeless, and it's wholly original. However scary it may sound, it makes you think and even question your nature. This is Mick Jagger and the Boys at their finest, and the Rolling Stone magazine ranks it number 32 in their list of the 500 greatest songs of all time. Sung from the first-person perspective of the devil, it sounds at first as if the devil is a living and breathing person. The devil tells us that he's no mere mortal, though, or in his words, "I've been around for a long, long year, stole many a man's soul and sealed his fate. I was round when Jesus had his moment of doubt and pain." In a boastful and unapologetic manner, the devil reveals his complicity in atrocities across the ages. What I find to be most fascinating is how the devil is presented as personal. He says, "I rode a tank, held a general's rank," and is also transpersonal. In other words, the devil isn't just one person, but countless individuals who have engaged in destructive and immoral acts at both specific points in time and across time. The devil seems to be humanity itself, or at least part of our humanity. One of the song's most memorable lines, "I shouted out, 'Who killed the Kennedys?' when after all, it was you and me." However antagonizing it may sound, whether we fired the fatal shot, hired the hitman, deceived the public, or engaged in a fanatical worship of a flawed leader, we all had some role in their demise. How is that? One explanation is a broader notion that the devil exists within all humans, perhaps as a primal force that drives people to destroy one another, be it through direct violence or something more insidious, like the quest for power, or even the obsession with those who hold power. At the height of the Cultural Revolution and disorder of the 1960s, this tune must have sounded chilling, made even worse by the searing guitar licks of Keith Richard and those woo-hoo wails which seemed to celebrate the devil. Naturally, some people were repelled by the violent anti-establishment lyrics, but others were galvanized. It depended on the listener's willingness to open his mind and acknowledge the destruction taking place in the name of God, country, democracy, freedom, or whatever words people were using then to justify their actions. I'm pretty sure this song would not have flown in December of 1963, but in 1968, just a short time after Senator and presidential candidate Robert Kennedy was killed, it would have been hard to disagree with the sense that the devil was not in the details. Hell, he was everywhere, manifesting through the actions of living and breathing people. Depending upon what poll you look at or the year that it was taken, it's estimated about 70% of people in the United States believe in the devil. And the number is growing. The percentage of people who believe in the devil is growing, while the percentage of people who believe in God is shrinking. Perhaps God needs a better public relations agent. The devil certainly gets better movie roles, and one could argue, better music. When people tell me that they don't believe in God, I always ask, tell me about the God that you don't believe in. But when they tell me that they believe in the devil, I say, tell me about this devil that you believe in. For the devil is many-faceted and complex. Some people take the devil very seriously. But he is also a foil for many a joke. Just check out Far Side Devil Jokes. And while he can be very scary, he can also look silly with those horns and cape and his trident. So what do we know about this devil character? Well, it depends on who you talk to. He's a fallen angel, evicted by God from heaven for asking too many questions. Oh, and then there's that little overthrowing thing that he tried to do. He's big on chaos and destruction. But really, his powers are limited. And he has no power to create. He relies on manipulation of humans to get things done. He likes to recruit us to do evil things. Modern depictions of him show him as suave and debonair. The better to seduce you to the dark side, my dear. The devil has likely been around as long as humans, not a coincidence. Most ancient religions have some dimension of demon or devil. In Greek and Roman mythology, they didn't separate out the gods into the bad gods and the good gods. Their pantheon of gods all had a variety of qualities, some good and some bad. One of the world's oldest religions, Hinduism, even their destructive gods, their most destructive gods, such as Kali, are believed to have good and necessary qualities. The devil, as we know him, really finds his audience with Christianity. It was the idea of monotheism, that there's one supreme God, this God of Judaism and Islam and Christianity, that elevated the power of the devil. As the only God, this Christian God had to have a foil, not an equal, but a force that could allow God to triumph. And for the battle of good and evil to play out, whether in a great cosmic force in the universe or in our own individual souls, we need the devil. The devil appears in the Bible in several places, but not as many as you would imagine, given his current popularity. In the Hebrew scriptures, he's most famously identified as the snake in the Garden of Eden, convincing Eve to eat the fruit from the tree of knowledge, which personally I don't think was really such a bad thing. A version of that story also appears in the Quran. The prophet Isaiah in the Hebrew scriptures is the source of the idea that the devil is a fallen angel. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which didst weaken the nations? Another Hebrew manifestation of the devil is in the book of Job, where the devil, identified as Satan, which means challenger, seems to be more of a drinking buddy for God than the opposite of God. He offers God a wager that Job wouldn't be so devoted if he lost his family and all his possessions. God does win that bet, by the way, but only by a hair. In the New Testament, Jesus speaks of devils and demons. But of course, the devil's real starring role is in the book of Revelation, where good and evil must fight to the end. Given the size and scope of these scriptures, the devil really doesn't seem to be a key player. And for the first few hundred years of Christianity, he wasn't really a player at all. Where the devil really rose up was as a tool for oppression. The concept of the devil is very helpful in systems that require power and control. Blaming the devil or humans associated with him is a way to distract us from power grabs of the system or to suppress any groups that challenge the powers that be. We see this in the medieval period when the concept of the devil was put to use by the Christian church. With plagues and periods of climate chaos, people were suffering and heretical religious groups were on the rise. The Christian church was the most powerful force in Europe and was concerned with further consolidating and maintaining its power. It had to find a way to make sure that people stayed true to their religion. So the devil became a big player, described in infinite details in church documents, serving both as a scapegoat for when bad things happened and a tool to keep people in line. For example, the plagues of that period were the work of the devil because people were not righteous enough, hence more allegiance to the church. It's the rising power of the devil and the desire of the church to suppress heretical thinking that gave rise to the witch hunts in the early modern period, starting in the 1500s. This was also a continuation of the church's focus on eliminating the indigenous religions of Europe. The church authorized various documents that trained priests to seek out and persecute those who were in league with the devil. One particular text was the Malleus Maleficarum, the witch's hammer, which described in lurid and pornographic detail how witches were in league with the devil and all the ways to track them down, torture them to confess, and burn them to purify their souls. Most of the estimated 200,000 people who were burned as witches were women over 40, who were healers or widows or just plain uppity women who didn't know their place. By convincing people that these women were a threat, the church was able to destroy some of the remnants of the indigenous pagan religions. They were also able to distract people from the corruption of the Pope and bishops and put the fear of God into those who challenged the power of the church. Thank God that historical period is over, or thank God. At least in that particular form. The devil is indeed alive and well in our contemporary world in so many ways. According to an article in the Atlantic Monthly, exorcisms are on the rise, and the Catholic Church is training priests in how to perform them. There are well over 100 trained exorcists in the Catholic Church today. Pope Francis recently said that the devil is a literal being devoted to deceiving and debasing humans. I quote, "We should not think of the devil as a mythical representation, a symbol or an idea, but rather a personal being who assails us." The church needs the devil in order to remain a powerful countering force so that they can elevate their own importance. And the harder the devil fights, the more meaningful the victory for the church. But enough about the history of Christianity. Let's talk about the devil and you, shall we? Some of you may believe in forces of evil that are beyond the human sphere, a transcendent evil, similar to the idea of a transcendent God outside the human sphere. Many religious people believe in the power of evil as personified in the devil. But the devil would have very little power if it weren't for humans. Are we putty in the devil's hands? Our culture is full of references to the ways that the devil engages with us to seduce us to the dark side. But the idea that humans have free will is critical to the devil's success, because we must choose to take up what he offers. The devil will set the stage, but you have to take the bait. One of the most enduring devil stories that appears again and again in literature and the movies is the idea of selling your soul to the devil. This story is more than 1,000 years old and still featured in movies. Some of you may know the story of Faust, a German story that was made into an opera. A well-off but bored man who exchanges his soul for unlimited knowledge and worldly pleasures. The term Faustian implies a situation in which an ambitious person surrenders moral integrity in order to achieve power and success for some limited term. If you want a more modern interpretation of this myth, check out the 1997 movie The Devil's Advocate with Keanu Reeves as a lawyer who sells his soul to the devil, played by Al Pacino. Fun, scary, and thought-provoking. And seeing Al Pacino as the devil is worth the price of the video. The lesson of the Faustian tale is not that we should be wary of selling our soul to the devil, but rather we should be aware of the small choices that we make that can lead us down that path. Or maybe we should just be wary of the devil's ideas. He seduces us with concepts and ideas and suggestions that feed our ego, feed our vanity and our pride, manipulating us into doing things that are against our ultimate best interest. We have all likely made small pacts with the devil. I'll just lie a little here, but then this good thing will happen. Or I'll take this road of least resistance, knowing that the true road goes in another direction. This story, the story of selling your soul to the devil, continues to have life because it continues to be relevant. It's a cautionary tale for all humans. The Enlightenment philosopher Immanuel Kant said, "The most monstrous cruelty springs from the same source as the daily trespass." I think that's worth repeating. The most monstrous cruelty springs from the same source as the daily trespass. And so, maybe my point is that the devil is us, or at least a part of us. And of course, this all brings me back to the vivid portrait of the devil by the Rolling Stones. To quote the reading I shared, "What I find to be the most fascinating is how the devil is presented as personal and also transpersonal. In other words, the devil isn't just one person, but countless individuals who have engaged in destructive and immoral acts, both specific in time and across time. The devil seems to be humanity itself, or at least a part of humanity." As humans tempted by the devil, we are in good company, the company of Jesus and the Buddha. When Jesus fasted in the desert for 40 days, the devil came to him and taunted him and said, "Woo, if you're so powerful, Jesus, why don't you turn those rocks into bread? Then you'll have something to eat." He also offered Jesus to give him all the kingdoms of the world in exchange for Jesus' loyalty. Of course, we know how that turned out. The story of the Buddha I found even more compelling. The Buddha, of course, was called Siddhartha before he became the Buddha, and he encountered the devil in the form of the god Mara as he was sitting under a tree waiting for enlightenment. There are many versions of this story, richly detailed, where Mara tempts him with beautiful women and threatens him with his great armies and challenges his worthiness to the task. "You're not good enough to achieve enlightenment, Siddhartha." Finally, Mara claimed that the seat of enlightenment rightfully belonged to him and not to the moral Siddhartha. Mara's monstrous soldiers cried out together, "I am his witness." Mara challenged Siddhartha, "Who will speak for you?" Then Siddhartha reached out his right hand to touch the earth, and the earth itself spoke, "I bear you witness." Mara disappeared, and the morning star rose in the sky. Siddhartha realized enlightenment and became Buddha. This is a powerful story that offers us some guidance for when we are seduced to do things that are against our better nature. Give the devil his due, but don't sell your soul. Remember your values. Remember your better nature. And remember the ground that you stand on. So may it be.